Okay, good morning, Holly Creekers, and welcome to Chat with JP. I'm here today with a special guest, Mayor Stephanie Pico of City of Centennial. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, good morning, Holly Creek. Nice to be with you again.
We are delighted to have you back, and as you know, the price of entry is a joke. Did you bring them with you today?
I have it ready, it lined up and ready.
Let it roll.
So, there's an 86-year-old gentleman sitting in his boat out fishing one day, and he hears a voice. It says, pick me up. And he looked around, he couldn't see anyone, so he thought he was drinking, and then he heard the voice say again, pick me up. So he looked over in the water, and there was a floating log with a frog on top of it. And the man said, are you talking to me? And the frog said, yes, I'm talking to you. Pick me up, then kiss me, and I'll turn into the most beautiful woman you have ever seen. I'll make all of your friends envious and jealous because you will have me as your bride. And the man looked at the frog for a short time. He reached over, picked up the frog carefully, and he put the frog in his breast pocket. And then the frog said, what are you nuts? Didn't you hear me? I said, if you kiss me, I'll be the most beautiful bride. And he opened his pocket and looked at the frog and said, nah, at my age, I'd rather have a talking frog.
You deserve a prize for that one, Stephanie. Well, Patrick, you've heard a lot of jokes here.
Oh, well, that's one of the better ones I've heard in the last couple of months.
All right. Plus, Stephanie, by bringing that joke, you've spared our listeners. I'm listening to one of my really corny ones. So thank you. First of all, on a personal level, everybody okay in your family during this COVID pandemic?
We are. Everyone is doing well. We've had, a summer of my son came home from college. He graduated in May and hasn't had enough ceremony yet, but he did get a diploma. So he's home living with us and just got a job. So he's out ready to go back to work. And so everybody's been healthy and been spending a good amount of quality time together.
Really glad to hear it. That's your one child? Do you have a son?
I have an older son also, who he's in California.
Oh, okay, so you're not dealing with the issue that's facing so many of our employees right now, and that's the dilemma around attending school in person or not. And,
returning back to school. I still substitute teach for the Cherry Creek School District, which will be challenging in and of itself this year. But, I get a lot of the email notifications and the announcements from the school district as to what they're doing. And so I know that it is a very taxing decision for the district to have to make.
Yeah, you're dealing with this firsthand on a personal level. Does it look like you'll be going in to do in-person teaching at all?
I have absolutely no idea. I know the registration process is, they limit as a substitute, they limit how many schools you can even be affiliated with so that you it's just an exposure thing. And I don't think anybody quite knows what's going to happen. So we'll see what happens.
Wow. Okay. Well, good luck. I hope you'll stay healthy and all of your students will as well. Well, there's a lot of water under the bridge since we've spoken. I think it was back in the springtime when we had our conversation and COVID was raging. We're very interested to hear. Well, one of the things that was on residents' minds, I guess a few weeks back, there was quite a stir about the city council perhaps having a vote one evening about whether or not to cooperate with mandatory mask wearing. How did that controversy come about and how did it play out?
So it ended up being probably one of the most active conversations we had with our constituents this year, considering everything else is going on as well. Tri-County had worked to put in a 90-day mask ordinance. And we had heard originally from people that they, weren't that supportive of it, didn't think that it was needed to be, they kind of have to be told to wear a mask, but everybody agrees that they should. And we had a really high compliance rate in Centennial already, about 86%. And so that's one of the reasons why Tri-County waited a really long time to decide whether or not to even put a mask mandate in place. We did see a spike after 4th of July, which was kind of common across the whole state, and that's about the timing of this thought process. And then just as the county had put, Tri-County Health had put their masks out in front of us to consider, the governor came in and put in his 30-day mask ordinance for the state. So it kind of, it made a lot of the things that we had been discussing and contemplating kind of pointless because the state had already made the requirement go. But one of the things that we heard from citizens, and we had probably 1,200 emails on the topic, that, you know, people were more comfortable with the mask ordinance, that they, you know, business owners were more comfortable with it, being able to say that it was the city, you know, or the county making them, Tri-County Health making them have the mask ordinance. People seem to think that it would make things better, more comfortable. So we went ahead and just stayed with the Tri-County Health order. And one of the stronger reasons was, too, that the governor only made a 30-day mask order, which today, you know, this was the first day of week of school, starting this week, at least for Cherry Creek School District, and the governor's already extended that. So to me, it was the mask ordinance really needed to be longer than just 30 days to get us at least through school starting and encourage people to go back to school safely. Also to try to keep from Labor Day weekend having a spike similar to how we had it 4th of July. So those two things in consideration, the city council decided not to take any action regarding removing ourselves from the Tri-County Health Order. So we have stayed with Tri-County, and so far we've seen, I think we're up to like a 94% compliance rate with mask wearing. So it did go up a little bit, and I think our numbers have really gone down quite dramatically. So I think things are going in the right direction for us as a community, and it's imperative that we all do our part to be responsible and, you know, take care of each other. So I think that we will find that beneficial in the long run.
Well, I'm sure that a number of the 1,200 emails you got were from residents of Holly Creek. It was it was a topic of high interest here, and I'm very glad to hear the high rates of compliance that you were talking about in the wider community. That means a lot to our residents here and to the families of our residents. It's not an easy time, and you know, we are very proud of the fact that so far, knock on wood, we've been able to keep the independent living component of Holly Creek COVID-free. And when I say we, I mean mainly the residents. They have been very diligent, and their families have been diligent in following hand washing, mask wearing, and all the other protocols, infection control protocols that are recommended. So glad to hear that right now the city of Centennial is trending in the right direction. Now, from all the information you receive from the state, and I'm sure I know that you have a kind of a pandemic czar on your staff, and you're in very close touch with the county and the state. A big topic on everyone's mind right now is what they're starting to refer to as the bidemic or the dual-demic, which is this fall's flu season and how that might play into the conditions around COVID-19. What are you hearing in regard to that from the officials that you work with?
So we've actually been asked a while ago to help promote and encourage that everyone get flu vaccines this year. Maybe people who hadn't had them in the past. We only have there's only about a 45%, you know, of the population that go get flu vaccines. And you can imagine most of those people are healthcare workers or people that work in schools or people that, people that have compromises. So either are seniors or are young people, children, you know, that might have a health condition and they get the flu vaccine. So we need to get that rate up a little bit this year. And that might help alleviate some of the stress that could potentially end up on our medical system. If we can keep flu people out of the hospital, then we've got more capacity for anybody that might have COVID. So I think that's one thing. But I actually think personally, this is my anecdotal experience, is that with everyone being so diligent about mask wearing and hand washing, that I think we could have a very low flu season because people are doing all the things that normally we never do. and we're not going to work sick. And that's, you know, kind of a way that flu tends to spread is we don't feel well, but we muddle through. We take our medicine, our cold medicine, and then we get ourselves to work because we can't afford not to. And now I think we have had a true mental shift in how we approach being ill and the responsibility of staying home and protecting others. And so it could be that we have a very low flu season this year just because nobody's going to be out making it a communicable disease.
Well, we're all hoping and praying that what you just described will be the way that it'll play out. No one knows for sure. And there is a feeling of uncertainty among everyone about that. Going back to the school from Quist, the school issue, because number one, it seemed like even you, who are a substitute teacher and are very knowledgeable about the policies, are uncertain as to what the practices will be just a couple of weeks from now, to what combination of in-person and online learning there will be. Why do you think it has remained so unclear right up to the last minute like this? And are there projections that have been done on the likely increase in infections as a result of children coming back to school?
Well, I think one of the reasons they wanted to see, they had multiple contingency plans in place. I think most of the superintendents for the schools have said, based on what the numbers look like, we needed to be adaptable to be able to open in one way or another, depending on how it looked. A lot of people were, that was where the mask ordinance became such a pressure point for not only the governor, but for the Tri-County Health, because the school districts really needed that confidence in knowing that the community around them supported and would help in trying to reduce the numbers of people with COVID-19 and make the community safer. So with that, they looked at the rates of drop that we've had in the last few weeks. And so since the mask ordinance has been in place, we really have had some really good downward trending numbers that have indicated to people that if you are, that we have compliance in the community with it, that we can all work together to try to keep those numbers down and protect the citizens. So just as an example, since June 9th, 1, 2, 3, 4, we've only had 9 people go in the hospital in the city of Centennial with COVID-19. So I think numbers like that can help people feel like they don't need to be quite as scared. It doesn't mean you be less responsible. It just means that you don't have to be quite as scared. So I think, I know a lot of parents are anxious to have their kids back in school because the home learning environment isn't the same for everybody. Not all kids get the same support at home that they can have at the school level, and especially in the elementary age. And so one thing I know, like Cherry Creek School District has had track school for a number of years where they've had they take an elementary school, and if they have too many kids, they divide them up into 4 separate groups, and then at any given time, 25% of those kids are not in the building, and that helps give us more space inside buildings for a time period where we have a bubble maybe of a population in a school. And I think by that experience that they have and how that system can run in year-round school is something I think we can take advantage of as a community, because it's a place where we're already kind of comfortable having kind of a strange schedule or a little off traditional schedule. And I think people can figure out well now how to kind of combine learning in the classroom and learning at home. And I think they'll do okay. But the big part that is uncertainty is if there's an outbreak in a school, there's still been quite a bit of uncertainty as to what does that mean? If it's in a single classroom, if it's in a whole school, how many cases, how do you contact trace back to find out where maybe that came from? But I know in most of the schools, at least at the elementary level, whether I'll have more in-classroom learning, they're not changing classrooms, they're not co-mixing with the other kids in their school anymore. So it'll be just those kids in the classroom. So hopefully containment might be a little bit easier to maintain if anything does happen.
So
we'll know exactly what classroom they're in.
Just part two of my question was, has the school district actually done any projection on the number of infections that are likely to happen?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, we're down to the last minute or two, and I still have a quick question for you. Well, a certain political party is having its convention this week, and another one's having its convention next week. And we don't talk partisan politics on HCRK, But I am very, we do talk public policy. So my question for you is, no matter who's sitting in the Oval Office next January, what are the top three things that you feel the federal government can be doing to help you in your role in dealing with the pandemic and Centennial?
Well, the one thing we've been asking for, so Centennial and Arapahoe County were fortunate to receive the CARES Act dollars from the federal government. And so we have initiated that into a business grant program and home-based businesses, and that's been a very successful program for us. But we have a time frame that all that money has to be spent by December 31st. So the priority that we've had in the last month or so is reaching out to our legislators and talent, asking them to extend that deadline past December 10th or December 30th, because having to spend, we had $10 million of CARES Act money for the city of Centennial, and we don't know what's coming in the future. So it would be appreciated if we could have an opportunity to kind of bank some of that in case something happens in the winter, or I personally look at, we have a responsibility to help get out if it becomes a vaccine. If we need to handle immunizations for people, we need to still have this, we have a testing center that's out at Aurora Sports Complex. If we end up having to turn that into an immunization center, we are going to need funding for a longer period of time in order to keep that going into the spring. So that's one of the big priorities for us, is making sure that we can continue going forward into 2021 with relatively strong funding in order to maintain and get out to our citizens what they need.
And what's the name of that program, in case anybody wants to be supportive of that?
It is the CARES Act funding that we received from the federal government.
So C-A-R-E-S? Okay, well, we have another minute or so. Are there a final point that you'd like to make to our listeners?
You know, I'm very proud of how everyone in Centennial has responded to this crisis, and I know it's been really challenging, and especially for our seniors in our community. My mom lives in a senior community, and I finally got to see her in the beginning of, I think, July. I've seen her three times now, so about every other week I can get a patio visit. So I hope that your residents are able to still connect with their families and find other ways to do that, and realize that this will pass. And I know you have very strong residents that have been through an awful lot in their lifetime, and I'm sure that to them this is a very frustrating way to have to be this summer. But I hope that they can hang in there and get some good time with their family in some type of a digital format that's safe and keeps everybody spirits up.
Yeah, we're working on a couple of new options for that are data driven. Final question from a resident. Will there be a ballot drop box at Holly Creek this year? If not, what's the postage amount going to be? And when will that be communicated and published? People are very concerned about having their ballots counted this fall.
Oh, yes. And so I don't know if there'll be a specific ballot box at Holly Creek. I'm not sure how many the county is going to fund and add additional boxes. So I can check on that next, make sure that we look at that. But the one thing I think we have confidence in is that we've been doing mail-in ballots in Colorado for a really long time. And our system has passed through many audits that have shown that we've had very, very low rates of any type of, there's no fraud. There might be ballots that don't qualify, but there's no fraud in our system that we've found. And we've been through it at the state level and at the county level through those inspections. So I hope people have confidence in the fact that we vote well by mail, because we've been doing it for a long time, and we have all the systems in place that really check signatures and make sure that people are all getting their votes in. And our people have a lot of experience with understanding that it's sometimes better to drop off your ballot than it is to mail. So the post office has not always been a big issue for us, because most people drop their ballots off instead of mail.
Thank you for clarifying that. Mayor Stephanie Pico, thank you for joining us today. We hope we'll have you back again sometime this fall. Please.
Sure thing. I appreciate it.
Keep well. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You guys have a great day.